from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to episode 105 of Dads from the Crypt, Tales of the Crypt podcast. My name is Jason, and I'm joined by Mondo.
Hello.
Hello. And our good friend Rachel is back from the Zombie Girls.
Hi. Thank you so much for letting me come back.
You're breaking down our doors to come back.
I've been like at the podcast studio window like, hello.
The virtual window.
They let me in like a vampire.
You're just showing up with your bean chili recipes.
See, they don't know. The listeners don't know that you have been trolling me for 48 hours about this. Like, I had to go into like a deep state of contemplation and meditation, and I found a bean recipe to share with the audience, and it was all a lie.
Okay, give them the I'm assuming most of our listeners listen to BGH, but just for those who haven't, you were on their Meg 2 episode, and someone asked whether chili should have beans or not. I think that was that the question? Something along those lines.
And beans are blasphemy. They are disgusting sacks of goo. They are not meant for human consumption unless they are a chickpea. Yeah. Then we can have a hummus conversation.
Like a hummus,
not a fan of beans. So when you sent me the thing like, you need your baked bean recipe because usually there's something to prepare for this, I was like, okay, I got to figure this out. I got to be a good guest.
Oh, no.
So I thought about it. I looked up recipes. I prepared, and then I got on. And then I watched the episode thinking, oh, clearly there's some legume-related plot. <Yeah. laughs> Only to find out that nary a legume.
Well, I figured you just were on that episode and you get the joke.
Yeah.
I mean, when you live in a system of terrorizing beans, you never know where the enemies are hiding or where it's coming from. So I wrongfully assumed I could trust you, Jason.
Okay. Oh, yes. That was your first mistake.
I know, going back, I know the idea that beans don't belong in chili. I like beans in my chili, though. I know it's blasphemy, but I like it. Unless on a hot dog. On a hot dog, it should be just chili.
Yeah, so that's my thing. It's what is the application of the chili? Are we talking a bowl of chili on chili cheese fries or on the hot dog? I'm okay with some beans if I'm just eating a bowl of chili, maybe with some cornbread. Okay, fine. If it's on a hot dog or on fries, no, meat only. That's my take.
And
definitely meat.
Have you guys ever been to a chili cook-off? Or ever like either participated in one or tasted them at one? I always love it because you'll have the older guy who just fucking knocked it out of the park, and it's like ground beef that he got from, you know, that he found at Walmart.
Walmart. A shopping cart somebody left in the park.
Exactly. And then he just found the meat, like some stuff he had left over in his fridge. And it'll be this killer chili. And you know, someone that like got wild boar meat from wherever wild boars hang around, and like coyote squash, like these just crazy exotic ingredients. And I'm like, this is just garbage. This is garbage chili. Give me that fucking old man's food and stuff chili. Like, I'll
just take that. The one that like burns a hole in your belly later that night.
You know, I do like, if you can make a super hot and spicy chili, but the key is you have to use peppers that are flavorful. You can't just drop peppers in it just to make it hot. Like, I love habanero. I think habanero is super flavorful. But you can definitely cross a line to where all you taste is just heat and don't get any of the flavor and that kind of stuff. So it's very important if you're going to put a lot of peppers and chilies in your chili that
it's your dad advice on the top of the show.
Yeah, whatever.
That's good dad advice.
I haven't had chili in forever now. I want to make some chili. It's 120 degrees out here. It's not chili weather. I will literally eat soup every day. I love soup so much. I'll eat soup every day of the week. So I shouldn't say that. I could totally eat chili.
I made a pot roast, like gravy and everything in the Instant Pot today.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
Always comes out great. I love it.
Dude, Instant Pots are like they're a great cooking tool. We had stew the day 2 days ago. That's what my wife made it in, was in the Instant Pot.
Yes.
All you need is an Instant Pot and an air fryer, and you are officially a chef as far as I'm concerned.
We just got an air fryer a couple of weeks ago.
They are amazing. Amazing. Yeah. I have baked in my air fryer. It is like, who turns on an oven anymore? What is it? 1950?
Yeah. Your air fryer in the oven.
Dude, pizza rolls, Tostino. I don't eat carbs anymore, but Tostino pizza rolls in the freaking air fryer. Amazing. Leftover pizza in the air fryer.
Yeah.
Game changer.
So like, good.
So much to it. Broccoli. If you had broccoli, get the head of broccoli, cut that shit in half, like crisp it up in there. Oh, it's so good.
Hell yeah. Brussels sprouts, make it nice and crispy. Ooh, so good. Now I'm hungry. We got to talk about food at the end of the show, not at the top of the show. There we
go. And then another life update. I got my Crypt Keeper tattoo a couple days ago.
Show Jason. Put that leg up for the camera.
I don't know if I can get my leg all the way up.
I want to see you showgirl. Like, kick that leg up real high.
Maybe I'll put like a picture over the video. But that was an experience. I don't know if I'd do it again, but it was an experience.
It wasn't a first tattoo, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Really? And placement-wise, what part of the leg and like where is that on the pain threshold? As far as like, did you hit ankle? What was going
like
on?
Like on the like not on the shin, to the right of the shin. So between the shin and the back calf muscle.
Okay.
So that kind of flat part, which is kind of what I liked. Nice. It's weird because I can't see it like completely all straight on.
Uh-huh.
But my wife says it looks good. kids like it. No, I haven't had a chance to show it to anyone else.
You don't look at it in the mirror and be like, yeah, that's cool. You just paid the guy.
Well, it's still like got that wrapping around it. We just changed it today. So it's still not, it's still like, you know, doing its thing.
What, they give you Sanoderm? They put Sanoderm on it? Or
yeah.
Just okay.
Yeah. And they told me to change it after 2 days and put another one on.
Nice.
Yeah. It felt like someone was like pulling hairs really hard, at least at first. Mm-hmm. I was just like, the whole experience felt like going to the dentist, where I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm here. I'm just going to like try to get out of my head.
Yeah.
And just let it happen.
How long did it take?
It's about an hour and a half.
Oh, that's not too bad. More.
Yeah.
Not too bad. And is it done, or was it just like the outline and you're going back to shading?
It was done. It's black and white. You know, it lost some shading and stuff. So it wasn't like no color or anything. Nothing that's going to take that long. Not that big.
Jason sent us updates, and I wasn't sure if they were like, is he just, I think he's just nervous and was like, oh, it feels like this. They're doing this now.
Yeah, no, speed live.
Oh my God.
Because I was like, nervous. I needed like to get my mind off of it. I couldn't just sit there and be with it.
Yeah, that would have been great Patreon content. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah,
I'm just saying. Opportunity lost.
Oh yeah, that would have been cool.
Live cam.
Or yes.
If you don't live cam it, just like a time lapse would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even just a live tweet or X, whatever we're saying now.
No. Nope.
Like of the sensations.
Forever Twitter.
Oh, speaking of X, we can get that to a minute, but like there's some funny going on there, but Jason, hour and a half's not too bad though. That's good. That's a good time for tattoo. That's a good first tattoo. Like I think for my pinhead, I think we did like 10 hours that day, but he was going slow and we're taking a break every 2.5 hours or so, but it was still like, fuck, why am I?
It's still hairy.
I can't do that.
Usually I'm 4 hours max and I'm good for the next session. Depending on what we're doing, obviously. I let my tattoo artist decide when he's done.
Yeah. Oh, here's the best thing. So of course my tattoo artist is a horror fan. So we're talking movies and stuff. So everyone knows one of my favorite all time movies is Sleepaway Camp. His dad took him to see Sleepaway Camp and he was in the 9th grade.
That's awesome.
What? Like, parenting.
Dude, I know. He said him and his dad just kind of looked at each other awkwardly at the end, like, okay.
So you're coming to Vegas for the Joe Bob's Jamboree then, because that's like the big sleepaway camp
I know.
Tribute.
But yeah, so, and also like, we might go on like on a movie date or something, a movie man date together. Who knows?
Hey, dude, my tattoo artist and I became friends. We became good friends, so it happens.
Oh. I mean, you spend like quality time together, and you're kind of trauma bonding a little bit.
I mean,
endorphins being released.
He's the only person. He's the only person aside from my wife that's ever shaved my body. So, like it's pretty intimate.
Another Patreon opportunity. Hey.
Yes.
No, I guess sorry.
Mondo's never had a hernia surgery, but
I've never had a hernia surgery, but I haven't had my chest shaved by my. Oh wait, I got a vasectomy too. So there was that. That was
take your vasectomy doctor.
That's
out.
Some intimate shaving. Yes.
Yeah. But I was that asleep. Counts. I was asleep for that. They asked like, do you want to go to sleep? I'm like, yeah, yes I do.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into it. Tonight we are talking season 7, episode 5, Tales from the Crypt, that came out on May 24th, 1996, Horror in the Nights. Jody is having some weather-related internet issues, so Mondo is going to attempt to synopsize.
All right, so here's what I have to say in my defense. Whenever I have to do a synopsis, I've nailed like one synopsis because that's what I knew I had to do in advance and actually typed out my synopsis beforehand. So I usually find out I'm doing this when the show starts, and I have no time to write out a bunch of notes. So here goes nothing. The basis of this story is, A, we open up to the Crypt Keeper with a really cool spaceship set. I love that set piece. And he's basically talking about flying off in outer space, as only the Crypt Keeper can, with all his wonderful, wonderful puns.
Dressed as an astronaut. Yeah.
And I can't tell, but like it looks like his co-pilot is just a brain and a helmet. I can't tell if he has a body or not. So I thought that was pretty cool. But what this basically is you have a criminal, Nick. Nick? Is that his name? See, I'm already fucking this up. Yeah, Nick.
Believe in yourself. You had it. He basically
gets hired by, a mob boss or whatever to rob this place of jewels. And then he gets double-crossed by his partner, and they basically shoot him. And take off. And he now is trying to seek refuge with these jewels that he has. So he hobbles his way, or actually he drives to a seedy motel. He checks in. He makes sure he gives the guy cash, says, "Don't tell anybody I was here." And then he goes to his room. And then once he gets in that room, crazy shit starts happening. That's pretty much what happened.
That is accurate. Well,
he meets a woman. He goes down. So after he checks his hotel, what I love is he goes to check in his hotel, and the first thing he does is he's obviously been shot, but the first thing he does is open up his case and like starts playing with all the jewels he has in there, and then realizes, oh shit, that's right, I was shot, and then opens up his shirt to reveal this horrifying wound. Not horrifying, but I guess anytime you got shot, that'd be a horrifying wound, right? Like there's no nice way to put being shot. Like it sucks. I imagine. And then he goes downstairs and he meets this woman and he passes out. And he wakes up and he's in bed. And then he has these series of, I guess you can call them hallucinations, where things start getting crazier and crazier. A lot of very Shining-esque kind of stuff going on in this hotel, where at some point he has blood dripping from the pipes and blood like, first of all, I thought it was urine at first coming out of the radiator. I'm like, that makes no sense. That's gotta be blood. Like, why the radiator be peeing? But the radiator is squirting blood out. And then he envisions himself having sex with this woman he met. And she turns into this crazy fucking demon. And like she's sucking on his bullet wound. Yes. How did I not catch that before? if you're not watching on video, you should be. Because you can see Rachel with the cool demon wings behind her. And then like all these tentacles start coming out of his body. Like some Lovecraftian horror. And then there's like this yellow goo, I'm colorblind, but yellow greenish goo that reminded me of like when I had a baby and had to change a diaper. Not a fun color you ever want to see in your life. If you see that color anywhere in your house, it's not a good day. Like it's just not a good day. If you painted your walls that, you're a psychopath. So that's all there is to it. But and then he wakes up from all this. He wakes up from all this, and he's frantically another cool scene. He's frantically searching. He's kind of going crazy. They do all kinds of really cool stuff with this. By like the first day when the girl takes him back to his room, he goes to leave the room, but he notices it's still locked from the inside. He doesn't even notice that, but he has to unlock the door. They notice every room is 305, which is his room. And I wonder if that number has some sort of symbolic meaning that I didn't catch, which is the usual part. But then the very end is basically the mobsters he double crossed coming into his room and killing him. Or shooting him, but then it kind of twists out of the dream world into the real world, and this is where I kind of got lost. So you guys need to explain this ending to me. So like they basically shot him, but then he was already dead when they got there.
No, I think they shot him, but I guess that was the same place he killed the woman 5 years before that.
Okay.
So he happened to go to the same place in his hallucinatory state of where he shot the other woman. And if you notice that the room went from like a clean, somewhat presentable room to like this graffitied, marked up, dilapidated room in the quote real world. So I guess he was in his, when he was shot, he was like in a shock or whatever. So he went to this one place they was familiar with. Mm-hmm. And the woman was the ghost or his vision of the other woman that he killed 5 years, I think they said.
Because the whole part, I thought they were both ghosts. I thought that he just died on his way to the hotel because you also saw that bellhop all the time, and the bellhop always had that ghoulish face. And if you noticed, his whenever he had like linens with them, they're all bloody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Except for that we find out the way they found that they were, he was there was some mysterious woman called them.
So the woman's a ghost. So the logic in this one doesn't really, doesn't really hold up.
Yeah.
But okay. So thank you, Mondo. Rachel, what do you think of this episode?
I did my best.
You did great.
Thank you.
You did great. Thank you. So, okay. I agree with you that some of the logic does not hold, but I actually really enjoyed this episode. I love a new sort of film noir with a horror twist. That is a combination that I enjoy very much. And I don't think we have very many of, and we should have more of them. Elizabeth McGovern is sort of our femme fatale in this. And she's such a classic beauty. Mm-hmm. She's perfectly cast in this role. If anything, I just wish there was more of that. I know that the director is kind of known for using some noir elements in his filmmaking, and I wish he had really played with the lighting and we got a little bit more of her camping it up. But overall, I really liked her. You've mentioned there's some great visual moments. There's some great body horror in this that goes, it's sort of like film noir meets Poe meets Lovecraft. And so that's like that. Pretty fun. And I like the Laura character. I kind of feel like is meant to be a little bit of an homage to that film Laura. You know, there's like that same element of, is she alive? Is she dead? And like being sort of trapped in this room and the guns and all those things feel like homages to that film. It has the most aggressive dry humping I've seen in a very long time. So yes. Points for that, because we do see the tidy whities.
It looked like painful dry humping. Like,
yeah, that did not look pleasurable.
Like someone need to go to the ER after
that. Wait, that's not how you're supposed to do it? Ooh, I have some uncomfortable conversations to have.
That's like a high school level dry humping.
Dude, yes. If you're doing that in high school, like you still are not okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of ideas kind of like smooshed together, but I think it has a lot of style and I had a lot of fun with it. I think my only real critique is that it didn't really feel like a Tales from the Crypt episode to me, because it didn't have that element of dark humor that I associate with it. But you guys would know, you're the experts. I've only seen a handful of episodes. Just the ones that I've seen have always had this very like tongue-in-cheek black humor that I appreciate. Yeah.
This felt very much like the British crime noir that was very popular in the late 90s that, like, I think, like, Reservoir Dogs kind of made very popular. Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels. Mm-hmm. What's the one with Brad Pitt as the...
Snatch.
Snatch, yeah. So it felt like they're kind of emulating that and trying to make it Tales from the Crypt by putting a bunch of body horror, surrealistic stuff, and it doesn't quite come together. Like, I think this is one of the episodes where the parts don't come together to make the sum better. They kind of detract because they're all so different. You got a little bit of a crime opening. You got this kind of twist ending, but then this weird shit happens in the middle. That's kind of the whole episode. It doesn't really flow together very cohesively, and the ending is just kind of overly confusing. If anything, it needs to be, it's one of those things. This is one of those Crypt episodes where it either needs to be shorter or an hour longer. Like if you wanted to make like a whole, like you can make a whole backstory to this guy and like everything that happened, or you get rid of the backstory and just make it more straightforward. It's kind of in the middle where there's not enough backstory, but you also don't need the backstory per se, or you can like really simplify. I feel like it's almost too ambitious with some of those ideas. But you can only base it on what it is. But you mentioned again Elizabeth McGovern. I know her as from Downton Abbey as Cousin Cora. So it's always fun to see actresses that you recognize,
And bringing up lighting, I really love how the first half of the episode they kind of block her eyes out. Her eyes are always always has a shadow over her eyes. And I really like the way they did that. Like I said, that total noir style.
So Nick is from Godstrud's Park. And the other guy that kind of double crosses him, his name is Ronan Vibert. He was in the classic Dracula Untold. If anybody remembers that movie.
Okay.
And also in the same vein, Shadow of the Vampire, which is, you know, excellent, excellent movie.
Yeah, Shadow of the Vampire is cool.
But it's also directed by, so this episode is directed by Russell McKahey, who directed, who's kind of behind the new Teen Wolf show and movie, the MTV version. He also directed Highlander 1, Highlander 2. He did the Resident Evil movie. He also did The Shadow, again, Billy Zane. And then he did a ton of music videos, especially in the 80s, with people like Billy Joel, Queen, Boy George, Duran Duran. He was one of the very first, like, out music video directors and just filmmakers general for making all those. He also, I think, might be tied for the most Tales from the Crypt episodes anyone's ever directed. This is his fourth. So he did Split Second, the Lumberjack episode, People Who Live in Brass Hearses, the Brad Dourif and Bill Paxton episode, and also Let the Punishment Fit the Crime, one with, what's her name from Schitt's Creek?
I can picture her face, Catherine, but I can't tell you.
Catherine.
Oh my God, I'm blanking on it. But the mother from Schitt's Creek, I'm blanking on this.
O'Hara.
Catherine O'Hara, yeah. That's actually a really good episode. Rachel, you should check that episode. You'd like it.
Which one was that one? What was it called?
Let the Punishment Fit the Crime.
All right.
Writing
it down.
Yeah, that's a good one. And also this week, I did an interview with Russell McKahey. So I'll be out this week. I interviewed him like over a month ago just because his schedule was open. So we just went for it. So I've been sitting on it for like almost over a month.
Hey, man, don't pull the curtain back. You don't have to tell people that. Just act like it's fresh.
I know.
Now we're going to have to listen to his thoughts that are 30 days old now. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But again, really cool guy, Rachel. You should check him out. He'll be up your alley.
Yeah. I mean, I looked up all of his music videos.
So many.
And there were some, I mean, there are some bangers in here. But when I saw Pour Some Sugar on Me, I was like, yes. Hell yeah.
No way. That's awesome.
Again, when you think about an out man directing the Motley Crue and Pour Some Sugar on Me, like, that's awesome.
I mean, he directed the first music video that ever played on MTV.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. I forgot about that part. But yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on a second. Did you just say Motley Crue?
Did I say Motley Crue?
You did.
I did not say Motley
Crue. No, Jason said that's not a Motley Crue song.
No.
Who did Pour Some Sugar on Me?
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, yeah.
No.
Yes. 1,000,000%.
100,000.
Okay.
Come on. Are you trying to question me on this, dude?
If we're right, yeah, okay. You have to have our faces tattooed on your other leg.
Okay. All right, Mondo, what are your other thoughts on this?
I think you guys kind of... I actually liked this episode. Like, I mean, as much as I was kind of saying it got convoluted towards the end, I still really enjoyed, like Rachel pointed out, I love the noir style of it. I love the body horror. It was nice. I feel like this season has been so void of anything really creepy, to be honest with you. It's been a lot of whodunits this season, or a lot of, you know, not much horror. And this episode kind of turned that on its head. And I really love those nightmarish dreamscapes. It reminded me of when I had MRSA and was waking up randomly in sweats in a hotel room in Minnesota. Like, that's how I felt every time I woke up. I almost got flashbacks of that. Like, it really made me uncomfortable in a good way. I mean, in the best way possible. So, I was a fan of this. But I do think acting-wise, the female lead was much better than the male lead.
Yeah.
Like, they have, at first, when she's kind of rubbing up on him and touching him, like, I don't know if there's ever been like more unsexy sexual chemistry of all time. He just looks generally like annoyed, like he's trying to hold in a fart. Like, that's what it looks like. He was completely uninterested in the situation, and so I really wasn't a big fan of the male lead in this, but he still did okay. But I thought the female lead was phenomenal in this episode. Yeah. But I think so far I would probably say strongest episode of season 7 so far. And maybe it's recency bias, I don't know, but I did watch it today after a long work day and a 35 minute drive home in the heat, and I still enjoyed it. So usually that's immediately like a recipe for wanting to hate something.
I definitely agree. This is the most horror of the episodes of the season so far.
And the image in the bed with the tentacles and the goo, that'll stick with me. That's such great visual.
Yeah. I can agree with that.
I mean, there's a handful of moments in this, I think, that are like genuinely cool visuals. Yeah. Like even him running through the halls and when he sees that all the room numbers are the same number, like all of those, that kind of sort of dream logic that's happening right there, I found really compelling. I was like super tired. I'd been unpacking all day and I was like kind of getting a little sleepy about midway through it. And then that, like the end, as much as it doesn't make sense, like the bang is at the end and I was like, oh, I'm awake now. I'm wide awake. There are tentacles. Yeah, I am into this.
She's in the tentacles.
Yep. So it must be true.
Yeah, there is kind of that slow build and then like out of nowhere is that insane sex scene. So well done. Yeah. And then you brought up when you see all the room numbers, they did that overhead with the camera, like kind of going through the hallway. That was really, really cool too.
Yeah. I mean, he uses a lot of really interesting shots. Like he plays with Dutch angles a lot and like his camera placement, like really adds to the feeling of uncanniness. Like I think we can sort of pick apart the plot or the story, but in terms of the actual filmmaking, he does really have a clear sort of voiciness that I really appreciated in the episode.
Yeah. Okay. You're raising my opinion of this a little bit. It irks me when something's like, was this a dream? No, this is a dream. Mm-hmm. It's like dream upon dream upon dream. It's like when you watch Nightmare on Elm Street movies, like, sometimes they can be a little too much with their, oh, it was a dream. Oh, it was also a dream. This is also a dream. Like they can stack up and you're like, okay, at some point it loses the effect.
Loses its stakes. This is just another dream than a dream. Like who gives a shit? Yeah.
So like, I think the good Nightmare LFC is doing, like, don't do that too much. Like they know when to like pull one on you, but they also know like, okay, no, we're really here, you know?
Which are the bad ones that do that, Jason?
Five, definitely. There's way too many like dream within dreams on that one.
Okay.
Is this the last episode of Dads from the Crypt?
Might be.
Am I here for the end?
Just don't talk ill of Freddy's Dead. We'll be okay.
Nah, five.
Which we covered on Zombie Girls with Rachel Tellier.
You introduced that movie to me, and I am a fan because of you.
Damn right.
Five is probably my least favorite, but I don't mind the dream within the dream stuff because to me, that's just horrifying to think you're out of the dream and you wake up. It's like, God damn it. Like, and they make that joke in Freddy's Dead when he's like, nothing in the world is going to make me leave this bed. And then it lights on fire. And he's like, damn it.
So that was good.
I love Freddy's Dead because Freddy's Dead has that beautiful, like you brought up Rachel, how this episode didn't have that classic Tales camp, which, also, I do think Tales is at its best when it's balancing that campiness and that goofiness with the horror, which they really haven't done at all in season 7, just to let you know. They really haven't done that at all. But I thought Freddy's Dead could have been a long Tales to Crypt episode. I mean, best way possible because they balance like that horror with more camp than horror in that one, obviously. But still, like the stuff they let's start reviewing Freddy's Dead again.
Yeah, I know. It's like John Waters meets... David Lynch, that it's like a mashup of those two.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk about the comic. The comic, very different, but there's like some DNA somewhere. So basically you have a guy who runs an inn of some sort or some like group of cabins. I don't know what you call it. It says tourist cabins. Yeah. And he has a really bad vision or dream of these couple that check in for the night. And he is like overhearing them talking and the woman is very distressed, very like out of it. And he hears the husband saying, okay, honey, good night. I gave you your drugs, so you'll just sleep through the night. But the woman wakes up and sees a cat and then attacks the cat and is freaked out and kills the cat. So definitely not a Rachel comp. It doesn't show it, but. But basically the husband is so distraught that he ends up killing his wife and then he shoots himself. But right before he shoots himself, he's saying, oh my God, I'm sorry that you've gone insane ever since, a cat killed our baby. And ever since then, you've like, anytime you see an animal, especially a cat, you go crazy. You even tried to jump in the grave with the baby during the funeral. So I guess that was her trauma, yada, yada, yada. So this guy, so again, the innkeeper is kind of like overhearing this or having a vision of this, but then he wakes up. And then he's like telling his friend about this crazy vision he had. And then, of course, the last panel is the exact same couple showing up. So we don't know whether he's in a loop or he's having a premonition, but it's the same couple happening. So that's kind of it.
Sounds like a real feel good issue of Vault of Horror there.
I know.
That I don't know that you could make something less for me. It's a combination of cat murder and female hysteria.
Exactly. Like,
females are dead babies, dead cats, suicide. Yeah. Like Jesus Christ.
I know. This is from Vault of Horror. I don't have the actual information. So.
Issue one, I think.
Issue one. Okay. Yeah.
Issue one. Yeah.
It's got a fun little picture of a guy on was it the rack where they like lay you out with your hands up and your legs down.
That'd be the rack.
Stretched. Yeah.
Which I've always stated would probably feel really good for like half a second. Like you did that sweet spot where like everything just be stretched out. Like,
and it's you're, the original chiropractor. Mm.
Yeah. You'd be like, you know what? This is terrible. Oh, right there. Right there. My body has never felt better in the history of being alive. And then about a minute later, life would just suck again.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite cinematic moments is Bill and Ted when they're in the medieval times and they see, you know, the Iron Maiden device. And he's like, Iron Maiden. Hits me every time.
I haven't seen that in a million years. I think I need to revisit.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. And the new one, Face of Music, is really good too. If you haven't seen
it. I really liked it.
I loved
that
it.
That was like early pandemic serotonin. I was like desperate for any joy. And I was like, this is the greatest movie that's ever made.
Spoilers.
I feel alive.
If people haven't seen it yet, I'm just going to spoil it so you can fast forward 20 seconds. But when they meet Rufus's daughter, I was like, when they did a tribute to Rufus, to George Carlin, I was like, oh.
I liked also, when was it the robot? It turns out to be good or something. That was really funny.
As a Barry fan, to see him show up on there was very, very excited. What is it? No Ho Hank?
Oh, yes.
As the robot. Yeah. I was like, this movie is a perfect film.
Speaking of which, Barry, like if you aren't watching Barry, you guys should all be watching Barry. Like one of the best shows ever on TV.
Ever.
Four seasons and like, holy shit. Does it go places I didn't expect? Just saying.
Yeah. It's an excellent series.
It is not a feel-good show in the end. I'll put it that way.
No. All right, let's do our episode rating. We do 0 to 5. 5 being the best, 0 being the worst. You can do half points. Rachel, you're on the spot.
Sure. I would give us a 3.5. I think this is it is not a perfect, like it's not the Tim Curry episode, okay? But it is, which is, in my opinion, a perfect episode. But I enjoyed it. I think that it has memorable visual moments that like I will always associate with this, that like when I see Bleeding Walls, I will compare it to this. I think these are some of the best Bleeding Walls I've ever seen. And Elizabeth McGovern is super great and hot as the femme fatale. So 3 out of 3.5 for moi.
Mandu.
You know, I was bouncing between 3.5 and 4. And whenever I do that, I have to go lower. I always have to go lower because I don't think I almost gave it a 4 based on what I've watched so far this season, which I don't. Which when I look back, when I think of some of the episodes, like you have a 4 too, which I don't remember them all, but I feel like they're better than this one. And it's not a knock on this episode at all, but like Rachel said, a lot of cool visuals. I always love the trope too, where blood's just dripping from the ceiling and the person has to look up at it. I love that trope. That one never gets old for me. Like I know it's gonna, like an alien when it happens. I'm like, yes. Like I know it's going to happen. I still love it. So 3.5, which is means it's a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You definitely raised my opinion, but I'm still going with a 3. I was probably like 2.5 before we even started. it's just compounding plot wise, and that just means a lot to me.
I think if they just stuck the ending just a little bit better, then I probably would have gone 4. But the ending, like I had to rewind it a couple times. Like, what the fuck did I just miss?
Yeah, I think from a filmmaker's perspective, it's very solid. So I think that's what gets the 3 for me. But also, and again, outside of, I mean, there's only like 3 characters, but when only one of the 3 is really bringing much, that kind of brings it down a little bit too.
Yeah.
But Commando, give us your song of the day.
Has Al ever listened to one of our episodes and been like, I can't believe you didn't like that episode of Tales in the Crypt?
No, because trust me, he sees more flaws as someone who actually was there making these than anyone else. So he'll be the first to like self-criticize.
Yeah, I can't remember what episode it was, but we were actually being very kind to it and saying, even though it wasn't a good episode, I think Al's comment was, what can we say about this episode? But it stunk. And I was like, I didn't hate it.
He's usually not talking about on the merits of the episode itself, of making it. So sometimes the experience of making something can be really shitty versus the final product.
Yeah, I can see that. Just wondering. We always appreciate Al with his insight into the episode. It's always fun stuff. So I have nothing that relates to the episode today because I just wanted to call out an album that I am absolutely in love with. And it's an album I'm going to pick a song off, but I can't really pick a song off it because I use this as when I was young, I hated Pink Floyd. If you guys love Pink Floyd, I'm really sorry. Now I love them. I'm getting to where I like them because I always hear fucking Money and Comfortably Numb on the radio. I wish you were here on the radio. Those are the only three songs. And The Wall. Only songs you heard on the radio, right?
Yeah, when you have the same song shoved down your throat.
Yeah. But then I was at a back before it didn't cost $8,000 to buy used records. And I bought an original copy of Wish You Were Here because it was like $5. So I bought it and I put it on the record player. I'll give it a shot. And I started listening to the album. I had to sit down and finish the album because it was that good. Yeah. Because it's like one of those albums where it's even took a good book and just said, hey, I love this book. And someone else took it from you and just read chapter three. They might be like, eh. But once you see that chapter with the rest of chapters combined, I think that's how Pink Floyd works. I don't think their music works as singles. I think it works as albums. And I'm going to say the same thing about this band. So the band called it, they go by DHG or Dodheimsgard, which I'll probably butcher that name. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. But the first two records, and please bear with me, because the first record is also in Norwegian, which is Kronet Til Kanga, came out in like early 90s and was just straight that early Norway second wave black metal sound, just aggressive as all hell. Then they came out.
This all just sounds like drugs that Joe Rogan.
Yeah, I'm looking at the band right now and I have no clue how to say that name.
I can only think of Joe Rogan going like, oh man, so tell me about this harsh black metal sound. How do I get it? Do I inject it in my anus? Like, what do I do?
The answer is yes.
Then they came out of the record and they came out with Monumental Possession, which is again more second wave black metal, and then the Satanic Art EP. And then they said, all right, fuck it. And they wrote an album called 666 International, which was a melding of just straight industrial with a tinge of black metal to it. Really, I think it's funny because I think when that album was came out, I was young at the time, it was back in 99, and the internet wasn't as prominent, but a lot of people shit all over it because it wasn't what they wanted out of it. And I think it's one of those records that over time, it's still not a favorite of mine, don't get me wrong, because I'm not a big fan of that industrial sound, the over-the-top industrial sound. Like, I had to see Ministry and they opened for Slayer, and that was when I went and got a beer and took a bathroom break. And not a knock on Ministry, just not my cup of tea. Same thing with Primus. Primus Live is
sucks. They suck.
Really? They suck.
They're
live.
So Primus? Bad.
They're terrible. It's live.
Terrible in person.
Oh, that kills me.
Phenomenally talented. Here's what I'll tell you: if you like jam bands, go see Primus. If you like me and you just I don't need to hear a 15 fucking minute version of John the Fisherman with three bass solos. I just don't need to hear it.
Excuse me?
Yeah, exactly. If that's your thing, Jace, if that got you turgid, then you should go you should go see Primus live. But for me, I'm like, no, get me the fuck out of this concert. Anyhow, they went to these few albums, that one and then Supervillain Outcast, and I haven't heard a Umbra Omega, so I can't speak on that one. But they were more like of the industrial kind of theme varieties. And this year, so the funny thing is, after 666 International, it was like 8 or 9 years to the next album, like 8 or 9 years to the album after that. And now it's 2023, so they just put out a new record called Black Medium Current. And I heard people buzzing about it, so I'm like, fuck it, I'll just buy the vinyl because I'm stupid and like wasting money. So I bought my 401k is in all these vinyl fucking records, basically. when I retire, I hope these are worth something.
Hope they can turn it into a coffin.
Hey, there we go. There's always a silver lining. But the new record, I think,
vinyl
is
lining.
Phenomenal. It's this fusion of harsher black metal with this still this industrial sound that's not overwhelming, but is just a complement to everything else. And then you have this like weird jazz stuff going on. Like these jazz patches and like some saxophone and some horns in there. And it just all fucking works. And I don't know if like an individual track, like if I told you, because they're long tracks, if I said listen to track one, yeah, I think you'd get it. But when you listen to the whole album and the way it all just meshes together perfectly. So because it is Song of the Week and not Album of the Week, I will pick a song off it. And I'll just pick the first song because it's 10 minutes long. I think it's a great representation of the record. It's called Et Smelter. Just know it's track one, dude. This is why I don't remember song titles, because these fucking bands and their weird song titles. But yeah, definitely check out the record, Black Medium Current by Dadheimsgaard from our friends in Norway. Highly recommended. My album of the year right now.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And we're late in the year. That's not like a January, like, bold statement.
No,
we're touching up against fall.
It's good. It's kind of rare nowadays that I'll give... I know, like, it always blows me away when people are like, oh yeah, I had to listen to this record like 9 times before it clicked. I'm like, if it takes 9 times for a record to click with me, then I think it's just not a great record. Like, I shouldn't have to, you know, I think there's movies we've all watched, right? And said like, man, that movie was, I don't know if I liked it. I need to watch it again. And you watch it again. And some of the second time, like, oh, I picked up this and now, like, I'm really into it. I think a record, you can do that too. But I think usually a record will give me a reason to want to go back to it. Like, man, I listened to that album and I don't know if I love it, but something about it makes you want to go back to it. This one, I just listened to it like 4 times in a row. So I'm going to just keep fucking putting this in my ear holes because I love it so much. But there's cello on it. There's theremin. Like, it's just so good. Ooh. So highly recommend it to even people that don't like really black metal. I think if you kind of dig industrial or just want to hear, everyone seems to be into off-the-wall music nowadays. So if there's an off-the-wall music, maybe give it a listen. And if you like it, cool. If you don't, I don't know. Still give us a 5-star rating on iTunes.
I love the life cycle of an album that you love. Like, usually there's like maybe not in this case, but like a single or something. You're like, I got to have this album for this. Yeah. And then you listen to it. And then there are like songs that you maybe disregard. But over time, you like find new favorites. I feel like there is a journey that you go on with an album that rarely is the song you like to begin with, the one you like. It's like the one you're like, eh. By the end, and you found the deeper cuts that you're like, now this is the true song. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I got into Motorhead basically because, you know, everyone knew Ace of Spades, knew all their hits.
Of course.
But then I started buying the records and really diving into their deep cuts. And I'm like, holy shit, this is good. Like, Lemmy was an awesome songwriter that probably never got the credit he deserved because a lot of that stuff is hidden in those deep cuts. And it's so fun to discover that from a band, like, especially when all you know is the hits and suddenly you're diving in. You're like, why do more people not appreciate these certain songs?
Right. Yep. It's the only sort of medium that you have that experience with, really. Like, you either like a movie or you don't. You're not like, well, I like this hour or minute 36 through 37, but originally I liked minutes 43 through, you know what I mean? It's specific to music and appreciating music. It's unlike anything else.
And I know nowadays you see a lot of bands doing EPs and doing a lot of singles. Like, some bands are, I've noticed some artists are just releasing singles nowadays because I think more so in our everything at our fingertips society, it's hard to get someone to sit down and listen to a whole album. So I almost wonder, like, I think it's discouraging a lot of musicians from really writing that full complete album. So like, when you do find those, I think they're almost like a hidden gem nowadays, kind of when you have just a full complete awesome album start to finish.
Definitely.
And that's not a knock on the musicians themselves. It's like, you know, if you're making money because you're releasing singles, like, dude, you got to make money, man. Dude, make a living. But I get it.
Also, totally varies by genre. Yeah. Like, especially now, like with metal and doom and all this stuff, it's the songs are getting longer and longer and longer. And it is almost just like a one operatic piece. Mm. Whereas, like, you know, pop albums, those are singles are fine. Yeah. EPs are fine. But I mean,
in the digital age, it's all singles.
Yeah. I almost feel like it's like a reaction to that, like the way that music is now, like, you know, in like heavy music, like it's all pretty, I don't know. Not singly.
Yeah.
Let's just say that. You're not going to put on a ghost album and be like, go to track number 4. Like, it's a whole.
I mean, the new thing. Stuff, I don't know, but
you know what I'm saying.
I know what you mean. No, I told my Opus Eponymous, in my opinion, is a perfect record from start to finish, and no one can, I will fight anyone to the death over that. Yeah, but I know exactly what you mean. And I think it was, especially now, because metal is never really radio friendly. So I don't think there's ever that pressure to put out the hit, even though, like, obviously Black Sabbath had that pressure, like Metallica did, Megadeth I'm sure did, Ozzy, Motorhead, the bigger bands had that pressure to put out those radio hits. But, like, you know, Dadheimsgaard is not going to be on the radio anytime soon. And if they do get in the radio in Norway, there's like 10 people that live there. So it just gets all 10 people just excited. I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's a much smaller, it's much, yeah. And I think it's Finland that has like more black metal bands per gig. For every five people is one black metal band or something. Like, I don't know. Some one metal band.
It's some that's ridiculous their greatest number. Export.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's still a weird thing where like if you talk to, especially like it's kind of funny because older people don't think this way, but a lot of the young kids that are coming up and discovering like this early black metal stuff who don't, like, mm-hmm. as you get, and they're kind of glorifying it when, as you get older, you realize it was just bored rich kids. And even the guys that are in the scene nowadays will be like, yeah, we were just fucking young and dumb and bored. But it's kind of funny, but a lot of the youths in Europe that are into metal, like they fucking like hate American black metal. They say like, oh, Americans don't do it right. They can't. It's so,
that's not true. I mean, that's true in the beginning, though, like true black Norwegian black metal.
So, meanwhile, you have fucking Dark Throne releasing an album with Fenris ice skating on the front of it. I'm like, I love it so much. Take the piss out of the genre.
Yeah. I remember Phil Anselmo started a black metal band. I was like, and I'm out. We're done. We're done here.
Did you ever hear? Well, he started. Did you ever hear the one he did, Viking Crown?
Yeah.
It wasn't the worst thing I've ever heard, but it wasn't good either.
It's not the worst thing, but I was just like, oh, come on, man.
He's a problematic guy. That said a lot of.
Yeah.
And to his, what I will give him credit for, though, is anytime he's done something stupid, he's at least been like, I'm a fucking idiot. Don't fucking listen to me. I'm trying to be better. But, well, still, though, good. But still, though.
But still, are his fans listening is the question.
No. Sadly, no. But well, he also was in a band called Necrophagia, which is a cool band.
Yeah.
Very, very horror themed. And they did like their first EP is Holocausto de Mort. Second one was a Black Blood Vomitorium. And the first song is about the beyond. Mm-hmm. And they did the Cannibal Holocaust EP. And then they kicked him out of the band. And for the better, because it went from being like this grindy, like death grind stuff, to they brought in Mirai, who played with Sai, who's a Japanese black metal band. And really cool, because you can definitely hear the Japanese and the Asian influence in his music. And it's awesome. Shout out to my old guitar player, Louis, who has his own project called Tearstain. And he's a classically trained guitarist from China. And you can definitely hear his Asian influence in his guitar playing. I'm not just saying it because he's a close friend of mine, but the guy's a phenomenal guitar player. You guys should check out Tearstain if anybody's on. Louis, I love you. I hate the name of your band. he knows that. But and they brought him in, and then it turned into like being more like woven pieces of like, it went from being sounding more metal, but like metal that could be behind a horror movie soundtrack. And if anybody out there has any interest in this, the one song I would say that kind of encompasses that sound would be, they have a song called Paradise Eve. I think based off the video game and the Japanese horror film, they have this weird little synth that plays throughout it. That's just creepy as hell. And it's just chef's kiss. So, song number two, Parasite Eve by Necrophagia. Everyone should check that song out. That was post Phil Anselmo. So if you don't want to support anything Phil Anselmo did, you won't be.
Thank you, Mondo, and
I don't blame anyone that does not want to support him. Trust me. It's,
all right. Jody's not here for horror news, but I did find something that we don't talk about wrestling often on this podcast, but I saw a headline and maybe Mono can explain it to me. AEW holding the first ever Texas Chainsaw Massacre Death Match Championship.
Yes. So it's a tie-in with the video game, and it's probably going to be a cinematic match, meaning it's just going to be over the top and goofy and look like a movie. Like the Hardy Brothers have done that in recent years. They've done these great, like, even if you don't like pro wrestling, you just seek out like the Hardy compound cinematic matches, because they're just fucking ridiculous and over the top. Like, he gets drowned in a lake and comes out as a different person because it's the Lake of Reincarnation.
What?
And there's a whole thread with how much he loves green beans. And he goes like on this big monologue and goes, because we have to save the greatest crop in the world, the greatest vegetable in the world, the green beans. Like, it's so fucking ridiculous. It's not. It's just goofiness. It's going to be just plain goofy. It's going to be just straight goofiness.
So it's just the tie-in with... So it's a tie-in with the video
game. Tie-in with the video game, yeah. Tie-in with the video game. It is like 55-year-old Jeff Jarrett versus broken down like 45-year-old, I think almost 50-year-old Matt Hardy. It's going to be completely just cinematic bullshit. It's going to be fun. But the game does come out on Thursday, I do believe. I played the beta of it, and it is really cool. Did you play it, Rachel?
What I was doing before I came on here was playing.
Really?
Yeah, I was playing it with a friend of mine who's a games journalist.
Oh, and nice.
When I got to play it, it was fun, but there was not a lot of people who had keys, yeah. So matchmaking was tough. But the actual game, in terms of like the atmosphere of it, is pretty dead on. It's a lot more fun to be the Sawyers than it is the sort of the captives. Yeah, but
that's why I found when I played like the Friday 13th.
Dude, this is even scarier though because, I guess I can give away a little bit. They start you out in the basement all the time, and basically within 2 seconds, you're a fucking chainsaw coming at you, and then your butthole is pucker for the next 10 minutes. Like, it is just, the game is actually legit scary, I think. It has great atmosphere. Yeah. It's not my style of game. Those asymmetrical games just don't do it for me. They really don't.
I agree.
But I do think it's going to have its own, I do think it's going to find a good home. I do think people are really going to enjoy it if they dig into it. I think it's going to be an Xbox Game Pass as well. So if you guys have Game Pass, it'll be a free download.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Because, I mean, I tend to get excited about these. Like, I got really excited about the Evil Dead game. Yeah. And then when I actually sat down to play it, I was like,
I get it, right? Because especially playing your friends, there's teamwork involved and all that. But what I don't like about it is I just don't like that pressure on me. Like, I have to do my role as, and I just want to go be able to pause the game and go get a drink of water. Or if I just zone out for a minute, I don't want to have to worry about anything. So they give me anxiety.
I hate to say it, but generational thing. We're just used to like a single player. I'm doing my thing. Don't have to worry about other people. Like, some other jackass going off on his own.
Well, I think I like games where you do have an objective goal and you're trying to get to them as a team. But for some reason, like with these asymmetrical ones, I mean the other piece
they're
too is
stressful.
Like, they're very stressful. And I do think the other problem with them is that a lot of them are very limited on your maps, limited on your characters. So it gets to a point that once you've done, and Friday 13th is the same way. Once you've played it a dozen times, you've kind of seen almost everything. And then, which is still a fun game, don't get me wrong, but they do have their home, and there are people that absolutely, you know, Dead by Daylight is a perfect example as to the power and the staying power. Evil Dead's been doing really, really well too. So I think it's going to do great. I did read somewhere, and maybe I'm wrong, that they're going to put a single player kind of campaign into it.
They were talking about that for a while.
Which would be cool.
In what? In Texas, the TCM?
One of the two, either TCM or Evil Dead. Now I don't remember.
Evil Dead, but I don't know.
But that'd be cool. Right.
I mean, it's really fun when you're the demon, when you're like the Kandarian demon. That game is awesome. Yeah. But when you're just like, you know, that's the problem, is finding the balance too of like making the game fun all the time. It's so uneven oftentimes, you know.
Yeah, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre is definitely uneven. Like, if you play as the Sawyers, you're definitely overpowered compared to the... And which is, I guess, how it should be, though, because if you're a survivor, you're bleeding to death. You don't feel very good. It should be a little bit tougher for the survivors, but it is definitely, like... is definitely a bias. Like, I think you're going to see... What you're going to see in a lot of games, I hate to say this, is people realizing they're a survivor, and they're just going to exit the game. Which happened a lot in Friday the 13th. People weren't Jason. They would just exit the game.
Yeah.
All right. Just go to our Patreon poll of the week. Would you rather be 11 feet tall or 9 inches tall? Pretty much everyone that voted said 11 feet. Tommy said 11 feet. I don't want to have to wake up worrying every day about being stepped on or carried away by a neighborhood cat. Also, it'd probably be pretty easy to get a job in the NBA or WWE at 11 feet.
Counterpoint, you could take a nap on your cat.
So. Dude, I'm going 9 inches because, dude, like you're not gonna eat very much, right? So I'll try not to make a lewd joke out of that. But,
There's a lady present.
I'm not making a lewd joke. I'm thinking, you wouldn't eat very much. So that'd be cheap. Mm-hmm. You could poop, or you could just poop wherever you wanted. Like who's gonna care? It's like a little rat droppings. They'll think they have rats. You could just Dude, you could just sleep anywhere. You chill wherever you want. You could, I could fight my cat. My cat's an asshole. Like, I could fight my cat and, no one would be mad at me for fighting a cat because I'd only be 9 inches tall. Like, we'd have a 50-50 shot of who wins that one.
Imagine if you're 9 inches tall and you have, your NECA figures lined up. You just, have, use them as punching bags.
Why do I want to punch my NECA figures? I want to hang out with them.
Or hang out with them, wherever you want to do, whatever you want to do with them on your private time.
Dude, you could just be tired, and you could just Jason, you just put me in your pocket. You just walk to the store with me. Hang out in Jason's pocket.
Pocket Mondo.
Exactly.
Pocket
Mondo.
The number one gift this year at Christmas is a Pocket Mondo.
See, so 9 inches sounds pretty good, right, Jason?
I'm not one to...
Would you prefer 12?
Today we find out if Jason is a size queen.
I'm gonna leave you in suspense on that, on my size queen status. As someone who's already like over 6 feet tall, like what's another 5 feet, I guess?
What's another 45% of my body?
Like, I'm already hitting my head on, like, I already have, like, scars on, like, the back of my head from hitting.
So, but if you're 11 feet tall, right, you couldn't drive a car. You bet that guy in The Simpsons, you have to put your head out the sunroof or whatever to drive a car.
Spoiler alert, you can't at 9 inches either.
however, imagine if you had to fly in an airplane. You could just buy one ticket, and again, I just hang out in your carry-on luggage. Whereas if you're imagine trying to fly in an airplane at 11 feet tall. You'd have to, like, sit in the fetal position, like, in your chair. You'd probably be very sore by the time you got to your destination. Then again,
you got me on
with your stride, you probably just walk wherever you want to walk. So,
you're also 11 feet tall, so you're flying private. Let's be honest. If you're the 11-foot-tall person,
you can afford to fly private, yeah.
I don't think so. I feel like if you're 11 feet tall, you're getting dissected by scientists. You're going to be in some government research program. Whereas
if you're 9 inches tall,
I'm just going to be then I'm able to find me because I'll be hiding in the bushes.
You're dissected by a raccoon.
Hey, man, like, I have a 50-50 shot. First of all, 9 inches tall is not that short. How tall is a raccoon? Like 12 inches? I'm sure I could fight a raccoon.
I would love to see.
I like that all of this is based around who you can outpunch.
Well, no, I already said the.
Think about who you can fight at. You can fight a giraffe at 11 feet tall.
You can fight Chuck.
No, at 11 feet tall, though, I feel like I don't have to fight things. At 9 inches tall, like, it would be a fight for survival. You know what I mean? Like, I have to, like, again, I'm sure what's going to happen is me and my cat are going to get into it. One of us is going to be the alpha in the situation. This is how it's going to be. Like, my dogs are cool as shit. We'd be friends. My cat might fuck me up. I don't know. He might murk me up in that situation. He has claws. I don't. But I feel like nine.
Bold of you to assume that you're the alpha now.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, with my cats? I probably am with my cats. Only because I sound like I hate my cats. I don't hate my cats. I like cats. I just wish I didn't have cats because they're just, yeah. I wish I got suckered into both these cats. One was one I was supposed to keep for like a month when my friend found a new place to live. That was 11 years. Sorry, that was 12 years ago, 13 years ago. The other one, my mother-in-law's cat had kittens. That was like 13 years ago. And I somehow got suckered into that cat. They're perfectly fine. I'm talking shit about them. They're perfectly fine cats. Yeah, but they're, but I do make sure they understand that, like, They just have to know that I don't care about them as much as I care about the dogs that I do. They can know I love them, but they also have to know if a fire breaks out in the house, I'm rescuing the dogs and they're on their own. Hey, I'm being honest to them. I'm sorry. Like, if I have time to go back in and get them, I will. But they're the afterthought after the dogs.
Terrible.
Should I save the cats? Should I save the cats before the dogs?
All of the above! No,
that's the goal. That is the
I'm
goal.
I'm just thinking of, like, Pee Wee Herman. I can't remember which movie it is, but where he's like, there's a pet stop on fire. He's just running out with all the snakes and stuff. Yeah,
that's the goal. Yeah. My goal would be to save all the animals. That's my goal. But if I can only save two, that's Abby and Freya, because those are my babies, and I would die for them. I would go back into the fire for the cats. But again, also, if you open the door and there's a fire in the house and the cats don't run out, that's on them, kind of, right? Let's be honest, right? Am I right? I'm right on this one. Like, if you open the front door, if I open the front door now and there's no fire, the cats run outside. So if I open the door and there is a fire, they'd also still run outside. I'm just saying, I love my dogs more than I love my
cats. Listen, you can't unring this bell. Hey, you said what you said.
Hey, I'm just saying, I love my cats. I love my dogs more. I'm not afraid to admit that. And if someone else is like, man, I would save my cats and then save my pet caterpillar, I'd get that. But for the record, I would try to save my cats after I save my dogs. But I've also told my wife that if the fire breaks out and she has to save somebody in the house, she saves all the animals before she worries about me, because I don't want to live and not have my animals live. Because that would fuck me up for a long time, thinking like I got saved and my animals didn't get saved. But the cats.
Like a special bracelet for like a DNR for pet owners.
No, I want to be DNR'd if I make it
not
out.
Rescue.
But I'd rather have my dog saved, my cat saved than me. Because, like, I'm a human being with, you know.
I'm just like, picturing you throwing your cats into the fire.
No, I said the opposite. I just said I didn't say I wasn't going to try
fanning
to save them.
The fire. Like, to let the cat dogs through.
They're trying to exit. I'm trying to close the door.
You're just like using them like a blanket to try to put out.
Just twirling them around to create a wind tunnel.
I don't know why I just pictured like someone trying to put a fire out with a cat. I'm like, that'd be the dumbest thing in the world, right? Like, I know what I'll do. I'll throw a cat into this. It'll stop the fire. Fuck.
I hate this conversation. Can we talk about beans?
Yes.
Okay, Rachel, give us some dad advice, please. Just change the subject.
Find yourself someone who loves you like Mondo loves his dogs, but not his cats.
First of all, I never said I didn't love the cats. I just said I didn't love them as much as the dogs. That's just, I mean, so if your house burned down, you'd have to think, who am I saving first, right? Mm-hmm. My first instinct is going to be my wife and my dogs.
Oh, the wife made the list this time. Okay, good.
After the dogs. She knows that. She knows the dogs are first, because she's also in the same boat of like, no, like, you go save our babies first and then come back for me. You know what? I just hope I never have to. Now I'm like getting sweaty.
I really hope. What would I actually do now in this scenario? And for the sake of your cats, I hope you never have to make this Sophie's choice.
And if you want to know the funny thing about this is, my cats are fucking outside cats 90% of the time anyways. They'd already be outside. They'd probably set the fire.
Now? You think they didn't hear
this? Dude, first of all, my cat tries to knock all my shit over all the time because they're just mischievous little buggers. I'm just gonna put it.
Yeah, you know, it's so cute. I love it.
But then she sleeps on me, and I'm like, God damn, I hate you so much. I'm just gonna fucking squeeze you and love you and pet you.
See, I mean, like, dogs, they're so easy. You know what I mean? They just, like, you have to work to make a cat love you. I feel like, you know.
No, this is true. Like, cats are not. A dog's like, hi, you're a human. Well, I love you now. And a cat is like, oh, you're a human. Yeah, we'll talk maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, so when they do love you, like, that's meaningful, right? Right? I don't know.
I'm not going to put that much effort.
I respect.
I'll take the easy love from a dog.
I respect this. But what I do about cats, though, if you just talk to cats, they just assume you're their friends.
Yeah.
Like, you can say whatever you want to them.
Yeah.
And they just assume
they're
friends.
I have very sweet, lovey cats. So, like, I mean, I know other people do not have this experience, but, like, to me, I get unconditional love from my little cats. And so the idea of leaving them behind is shocking.
Yeah, shocking. No, I wouldn't want, I would, I'm not gonna lie, I would be devastated, but I would still be like, if it came down to my dogs or my cats, like, and I only have two arms, I'm gonna go back in and try. Put it that way.
Okay.
I'm not just gonna not try. Like, I'm going to try. But again, if you open the door in my house, the cats are running out the door. So it's like, okay, the second the door open or a window open, they'd be fucking gone before any of us. Mm-hmm. Every now and again, my tabby.
Look at you trying to find this loophole. I see what's happening.
There is a loophole where I feel like if the house is on fire, the cats would be immediately just gone. Whereas the dogs would try to actually alert us as human beings. Like, no, we must alert dearest humans. Where cats would be like, fuck it, everybody for themselves.
So
maybe I relate to a cat. I don't know.
Just run out of the house, the dog will follow you.
Yeah, maybe. I hope. Oh no! See, my little old lady Freya, you know, with her back problems or leg problems, she can't run very fast anymore. So I'm gonna have to pick her up and run her out of the house. I would die for that dog.
I did see a three-legged cat this weekend, and that was really cute. I'll give it that.
I just want to, like, send you a bunch of fire extinguishers just so I can sleep tonight.
He's going to go check his fire alarms.
Yeah, we're just going to do a little test.
Before I go to bed, I'm just going to light a bunch of candles and go to sleep.
I'm going
to
empty the lint trap in your dryer.
Tonight before I go to bed, I'm turning the stove on. I'm going to light a bunch of candles. We're just going to see what happens. Just
let nature take its course. Yeah.
What are you doing? Right. I'm trying to
prove
a point.
But think about what happened to the vinyl. I mean, the vinyl. You know, you gotta protect the vinyl.
You spent a lot of money on all that.
And see, I save the cats. I love my vinyl, but I'm gonna save the cats first.
Oh, cats before vinyl?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough one.
We got a humanitarian of the year over here.
All right. Well, that's been cat advice with Mondo and Rachel.
Apparently, I shouldn't own cats. I don't know. So I have two cats up for adoption. If anybody knows.
All right. Well, I think that wraps up another episode.
Wait.
Next week.
we didn't talk about. Let's talk about beans.
Oh, Rachel, do you want to show your bean recipe?
You can't ask Rachel specifically a recipe about beans and not have her tell the recipe.
That just doesn't need more dedication to the guy.
That'd be pretty fucked up, dude.
I know. All right, Rachel, what's your bean recipe?
Well, now I don't feel like you deserve it. This is the best hummus that you've ever had, and you get to go without because you played with me.
I'm asking to make it for
you
me.
You toyed with my emotions. You made me think about beans. No, it is actually Matilda's, and I will send it to you. You can throw it in the show notes. Although there are some directions that involve the phrase hot bean water, but if you can get past that, it's an excellent recipe for hummus.
Is there a chocolate starfish in the hot bean water?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. If you told Joe Rogan that bean water would hydrate you faster than regular water, he'd definitely be drinking bean water at the gym. I'm just saying.
Oh, can we do a plug for pickle pizza?
Oh, yeah. Pickle pizza is delicious. Pickles on pizza.
Is that
pizza.
A place? Oh, I put potatoes on pizza, and that was delicious.
Potatoes are good, too.
Oh, interesting.
I was in Phoenixville with Joe Ferry, and I had a pickle pizza, and holy shit.
Really?
Yes.
What sauce was on yours?
I don't remember.
It was like a white one. It was a white sauce, red sauce.
I was like six beers deep. I don't remember. I don't remember.
Yeah, so this all, we were talking about this on Slack earlier, and people talking about pickle pizza, and there's like a promo for the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, which is excellent, by the way.
It looks really good.
I liked it. It's very much like Into the Spider-Verse, but that's a good thing, in a good way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we were talking about that, and actually I was at the county fair a couple weeks ago, and we had pickle pizza. My wife loved it. I had like a bite. I liked it, but I'm like, I can't eat a whole slice of this. But the one bite I had was good.
And what was the sauce situation? Because now, as a pickle lover, I want, okay, yeah, because I'm even just sort of like a brushed olive oil and garlic would be good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's how I would eat it. I think the white sauce made it a little too rich. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think like almost like no sauce or pesto maybe, light pesto.
Mm-hmm. When I was in
you got a lot of garlic competing. Oh, I think.
When I was in the Bay Area, they had at the Alamo Draft House, they have as an appetizer pickle fries.
Yes. Oh,
yeah. Holy shit. Like,
yeah.
I absolutely loved those so much. I dream about those fucking things.
Those are killer, and they also have some boozy milkshakes there that highly recommend.
Whitney told me about that, but again, we had just eaten. I was very drunk and a little high, and we're watching Jason 10, and I was like, all I needed was like, give me some greasy food in my stomach, so some greasy pickle fries I can munch on the whole episode. I love milkshakes, but like, I can't drink them anymore, but after like four or five sips, I'm just done. Like, I can't do sweets that well.
The one time I went to the Alamo Draft House in downtown LA to see Infinity Pool, and they had a orange icicle or creamsicle milkshake, and it was amazing.
Was it a boozy one?
It was not boozy, but
a shame. They have a nice heavy pour. And like when I saw it at Alamo Draft House, by the time Pennywise showed up, I was feeling good. Yeah, Alamo Draft House has great food. Like, I love their setup. It's so cool. I'm glad you got to go to that one with Whitney, which is where I met her.
Oh, it's cool. On Terror Tuesday.
I was moderating a movie, like an interview with the director.
That's right. She posted about that. It's cool.
And I looked into the audience and I made eye contact with her, and I was like, I know that person. I know.
That's so crazy. It's a small world, and I kind of love it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've said it before in the podcast, I always stand by it, that horror people are just the best people.
Yeah.
I agree.
Like, I'm a metalhead, but I don't like most metalheads. Sorry, any metalheads out there. Any metal listeners are probably like, yeah, they probably agree with me when I said that. If you ever go to a metal show, like, you meet a wide gamut of people. And some of the people are not good people. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. The Bay Area metal scene's pretty good, but I do know exactly what you're talking about. Like, it is maybe an anomaly how good it is here.
Well, when I went to that Ludacris show, it was Ludacris, Death Grave, and Funeral Chant, Bay Area bands.
Like the what show?
Death Grave and Funeral Chant, Ludacris. The crowd is so awesome. It was a bunch of just like, it was a harmonious place with people having a good time listening to metal. There was no fights. When I went out to Wyoming for that metal fest in the middle of nowhere, same thing, just the fucking vibes there, just beautiful. I was having a great time. Someone lost their hat in the pit and everyone stopped so the guy could find his hat. Like, cool stuff like that. But I'll go to shows here in Las Vegas and be like, well, I've been here for 8 minutes. I'm going home.
Yeah. I wonder if that's because the influx of so many people who are from out of town. You know what I mean?
No, it's not like a community
where people see each other all the time. Because, like, here, the metal scene's not that big. So, like, it's all the same people going to the shows, you know?
The hard part about Vegas is that so many people work in the hospitality industry and we're a 24-hour town. So, like, back when I was younger and didn't have a 9-to-5 job, I missed so many shows. I don't get off work till 9 or I don't get off work till midnight that night. I think a lot of that's what it is here. Is why a lot of shows don't get support from locals. Not because locals don't want to go, because it's just midnight on a Wednesday. You get off work at midnight on a Wednesday, you can't go to a show that started at 11 or whatever. That's what makes it tough here.
Yeah.
And here, the shows aren't even that bad. But, like, I've gone to shows back east, and I mean, we went to one show, ended up being half Nazis. It was bad.
Ugh.
It was bad. Like, fucking, like, this is not a crowd I want to be around or be associated with. Or,
yeah.
I mean, I was openly talking shit to him, which was kind of fun. But,
Yeah, that is definitely something you're not really going to get a lot of in Oakland.
No.
Thankfully.
The Bay Area, like I said, the Bay Area is a cool place. The bands historically that have come out of the Bay Area, like especially modern metal bands, they get a lot of shit again from the Norwegians and stuff like that because they're too like earth, they're into the earth and stuff like that. It's like, who fucking cares? Like, it's one guy was burning churches, and guess what? He's a fucking racist. He's not the guy you should be idolizing. He was a rich kid from an affluent family that just wanted to be a rebel. Stop fucking worshiping the asshole.
I am sad because, like, that's immediately what everybody thinks of. Like, when they think of black metal, you know, that don't know, they're just like, Varg? Like, you like Varg? No.
I mean, I'll say anyone that played in a metal band or anyone that got in the genre listened to Burzum and was influenced by it. I think that's 100% true. Doesn't mean you have to fucking like the guy or spend money on his records or buy his.
Yeah.
I guess he does some tables. So someone made a fake account for him on Twitter, which is like the funniest thing ever, because they just took clips from his YouTube videos of him like in fighting poses. And like they post like me off to fight Antifa and just shit like that. Like it was like just the funniest stuff. And but I guess like they wrote the rules to his RPG that he guess he wrote it on RPG. And they did it in the style of the South Park Scientology episode, like every paragraph is like, yes, these are really the rules, and yes, we haven't even scratched the like rule number one yet. We haven't finished rule number one yet. Like, he's a fun guy to clown on now.
Yeah, he makes it pretty easy. All right, it's poor Jason's in trying to wrap up this episode. I'm so sorry. I just don't get to see you guys that often.
Jason's on the West Coast. It's fine. It's 10:02.
Yeah.
You might be the rest.
What time do you normally go to bed at, Jason?
Well, I get in bed and I just lay there like wide awake thinking about all the things I need to do.
So you can spend time with your friends, quality time, recording a podcast, or you can lay in bed thinking about all the things you need to do. One sounds fun, one sounds pretty fucking lame.
I'm a lame guy, what can I say?
This is true.
Here's my question for you, Jason. Now that you have your first tattoo, everyone knows it is a gateway tattoo. It is a slippery slope. Are you already planning your next tattoo? And if so, what is it?
Nope. maybe ask me in like 6 months. I'm still like, it was
not a pleasant experience.
My wife loved getting her tattoos. She just got her second one a couple weeks ago, and then her tattoo artist posted that she's trying to complete I guess it's a big thing in tattoo communities right now, to complete the Pokedex.
Oh.
So it's like tattoo every Pokemon of like the original like 150 or whatever, so they run specials.
That's funny.
So she's already like, so I think this weekend she's going to get one, like less than 2 weeks after she got her last tattoo, she's going to get her favorite Pokemon tattoo.
What's your favorite Pokemon?
What's the Pokemon?
Snorlax.
Bro.
Oh, Snorlax is cute.
Yeah. She's like all about it. She's like, was totally into it. Like, to me, it felt like going to the dentist. I did not love it.
No, I like it because I like my tattoo artist. And I love the finish. But I said last time, too, there is a point whenever you get a tattoo where I'm sitting there at some point going like, why the fuck am I doing this? Like, why the fuck am I letting this man carve me up with a needle?
Yeah, that's how I was like 90% of the experience.
And then, like, when my back one was healing, I couldn't even, like, reach it, like, to, like, just even slap it. That was miserable.
Yeah, so my wife forgot to tell me that she's going to need my help to clean and moisturize her tattoo. So I was helping her and everything. And eventually, like, I wasn't there all the time or when she needed to put the lotion on. So she got a spatula.
Yeah, it's smart. Put some on the end and just like... I think I had a paint stirrer that I took from Home Depot. Like a long ones just to put the lotion on and
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Lotion on your skin.
Or else it gets the hose again.
Yes.
You'll get more eventually. Yeah, you might. I don't know.
I probably will. Yeah. I'm definitely my first one I wanted to get originally was a Frankenstein tattoo. So I'm still kind of want to get that one at some point, but let's let this one literally sink in first.
Yeah, you haven't got to the itchy phase yet. That's the fun.
Yeah. Rachel, do you have any tattoos?
I do not have any tattoos. I'm like the last person here. I just like have never found anything that I really, really wanted that badly. And then now it's almost become like a thing where like everybody else has tattoos except for me. Mm-hmm. So who's the rebel now?
Yeah, no, I kind of think it's actually really cool. I think it's really cool. And I always like, I don't know, like I know people like when I was in high school, at least back in the when I graduated, 2001, like everyone was getting like a tribal armband or getting like because again, you're younger, right? I fault no one who was 16 or 17 and got a tribal armband. I get it. Like you just want a tattoo that's bad, but everyone was getting tattoos. Yep. And I was like, and I was just kind of like, fuck, dude, my first tattoo was my sigil of Bath on my arm. And then, I kind of wish I'd have waited till I met this awesome tattoo artist that is all my awesome, like did my whole chest and did my thigh and did my back. But like, don't people out there, man, don't just get a tattoo because you think you need to have one. Like you said, yeah, you gotta get some of that. Like Jason saw that Crypt Keeper. I was like, oh man, I really want that tattoo.
Yeah. But like, it took me a year to figure to even like when I actually said, okay, when I actively invited the idea of getting a tattoo, it took me a year to finally find the one that I was like, okay, that's it right there.
Yeah.
Right. And you're going to love it forever. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's going to be meaningful forever. I think if I had gotten a tattoo when I was younger, I would have a butterfly on like above my butt crack. Like I would have. Like I was like, that is a really cool idea. I should do that all, you know, and thank God I didn't. And so I don't know. At some point I might get something meaningful tattooed on my body, but like as of right now, there's nothing I really want that bad.
Yeah. That's perfect. Like, I don't feel people should get tattoos because they think they need to have one. Like, no, you don't. Like, just have your fucking plain skin. It's totally fine. It looks cool. Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Not that I don't love tattoos. I love tattoos. I think they're beautiful. I think it's art. And there are, I follow tattoo artists on Pinterest, like, or not Pinterest, Instagram, and also on Pinterest. But, like, it's not that I'm anti-tattoo. I just haven't had that moment where you're like, that's the one. Mm-hmm. That's the one I want.
Exactly. And that's which is totally, it's totally cool. I love that because I wouldn't, you know, yeah, if I was getting tattoos when I was 16, I'd have some stupid shit I'd definitely have to remove.
You have like a Tasmanian devil smoking a joint or something.
I wouldn't have done that. But I would have gotten like a band logo done and be like, oh shit, they're racist. I need to get that removed now. Like,
So there's a podcast called the Munster Party Podcast, and they have the coolest logo that I kind of want to get tattooed, but I feel weird about getting another podcast logo. Where it's Godzilla wearing a tiki shirt, like a Hawaiian shirt, but like with like a bong in one hand. I can't remember what's in the other one, but it's the coolest looking logo. I'm like, that would be a cool fucking tattoo.
Yeah, you shouldn't, unless of course it's the Zombie Girl tattoo. Then I fully endorse it.
I just want to go to California. I'm gonna have a wild night out with Jason. Jason's gonna wake up with a tattoo on his head.
Yes.
What tattoo should I get on my head? Like. I don't know. I don't even know. That sounds so painful, too.
Like, it's a Bam Bam Bigelow had. He had the flames, but he was a pro wrestler, though, so it worked, I guess.
Just get, like, a full crown of thorns. Like, you know.
You like oh, my God, tattoo? As a Jewish man, too. Like, holy shit, would that be?
Oh, my God. I'll just get a kippah tattoo.
I'll just get Yarmulke tattoo.
Yarmulke tattoo. Oh, my God. That's terrible.
Get a yarmulke tattoo and then cover up with a ball cap. So when you go to temple, you just pull the ball cap off, then you have your yarmulke tattoo.
Oh my God.
We're just solving modern problems require modern solutions, Jason.
You'd always be ready at any time. Like it could be 3 in the morning on a Wednesday. You say, Jason's go to temple, and you can be like, yep.
Bam.
I mean, it'd probably just as easy to carry a yarmulke in your pocket, but still, we're talking a, you know.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I think you should do it. Just saying, like, just.
Yeah, okay. I agree.
All right.
We'll make a $100,000 Patreon tier, and if someone pays for that, Jason, would you get the yarmulke tattoo?
Oh, I even know. It just sounds like the worst possible place.
First of all, is it illegal to put up $100,000 tier on Patreon?
I don't think so. The only question is, would he be required to split it three ways? Would it only would he actually? Only
I'll,
be
I'll create a personal Cash App. How about that?
Here's what I will. Here's what I say. We should do a $100,000 Patreon tier. Patreon people who are rich, hear me out. For the $100,000, I will give my body up if you'll give yours up and Jody give his up too. Not like that. But you can pick the fucking tattoo. And I'll get it anywhere you fucking want me to get it. For $100,000, yeah, easy.
You're getting a Tasmanian devil with a joint. <tonight. laughs>
Whatever, much worse.
For $100,000, whatever they want me to put it at. Just not on my face.
Okay, we need to wrap this episode up. Please.
Never.
That could be the coolest.
This is your life now. We're gonna do like one of those Tales for the Crypt episode.
Or should we do like one of those 24-hour castathons?
Jason,
lose our minds.
Jason's gonna wake up in a dead sweat in the middle of the night and still think he's on the podcast.
I'm still within the podcast on the podcast within the podcast.
Blood dripping from his microphone. Mm-hmm. A weird sex demon with tentacles.
How come
coming.
No one's done that yet.
What a podcast horror movie?
Yeah, where like blood is dripping out of the microphone.
Because it wouldn't make sense.
TM.
Blood podcast. No, blood microphone.
Bloodcast.
The microphone that dripped blood.
I couldn't deal with the microphone that dripped blood. Like death.
Okay,
like
now
death
I bed. Actually am in on this. Like, I want a short film called "The Microphone That Dripped Blood." Yes. Patreon tier. What are we?
All right. What are you guys? I want a microphone that I don't want to drip blood. I want to aggressively shoot blood out of it. And here's how I want this 2-minute movie to go. I want Jason doing the podcast and rambling blood. It's like, blah, just start shooting him in the face. And it's him going, he's getting railed in the face by fucking, by blood.
And then I wake up and the real nightmare is I forgot to use the bathroom before we start recording. And I've been trying to get off the microphone the entire time. So I don't use the bathroom.
I mean, old. Jason, we can't see you underneath like your chest. You could totally just pee and we wouldn't even know. True. If you had like a Gatorade bottle laying on your desk or a bucket,
that's
you could
the
be
prob-
in the bathroom. We don't know.
Yeah,
that's the problem with having a good microphone, though. You might hear it.
You have a mute button on that motherfucker, like you know that.
Slap the pee noise gate on there. You'll be good to go.
You've gone way off the deep end.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir. You invited me to come back. You,
I know. Every
you
time.
You reap what you sow, sir.
And now I'm thinking, like, now I'm always thinking, like, I wonder how many times I've been in a Zoom meeting and someone's just fucking peeing, like, on the meeting. Like, just.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
God damn it. Zoom meetings, the worst thing that happened in the pandemic was a Zoom meeting. Like, fucking everyone wants to fucking be on camera nowadays.
It's the worst. Anybody.
Let's turn our cameras
don't
on.
Watch us. Don't watch us on YouTube, please.
No, this is fine because I like our listeners, but I don't give a shit. I don't need to talk to some consultant and see his face. Like, well, I'm not gonna remember your face when I meet you. We'll just meet sometime. It's fine.
Okay, we really need to wrap up this episode, or else I'm gonna explode. Next,
hold
week.
On a second. That'd be good content as well. We could just wait to see it literally explode.
The Patreon.
I would just
say, the podcaster who squirted blood.
The podcaster who squirted blood. Yes. I'd imagine first of all your head would start bubbling like these guys are a little weird, like what the fuck's happening, Jason? It'd be like a scanner scene, but it'd be blood just squirting out like spontaneous combustion instead of fire.
The podcaster got UTI.
If
all right,
five
Rachel,
years from
thank
now,
you so much for this, coming on. Tell people where they can find you.
Thank you, and I apologize.
Don't apologize.
You can find me everywhere on all the platforms. Zombie Girls Podcast Network. Check out More Deadly, Stream Queens, and the Untitled Nick Cage Show. What am I forgetting? Cast of Caw, all of the above. As far as what we've got coming up, we've got some really fun interviews coming up. this month for our More Deadly. We interviewed, because of the writer's strike, fortunately, we were able to talk to a couple of directors. We talked to Stuart Thorndike, whose film Bad Things comes out this week, I think. I'm not sure exactly when this episode drops, but it either just came out or it's coming out, as well as Laura Moss, the director of Birth Rebirth, which is in theaters on August 18th. So I think also technically this Friday. I don't know when the episode drops, but those are really great.
We'll be on Sunday.
Perfect. Okay, awesome. So those will just have come out. They're both really interesting films, especially Birth Rebirth. Nobody's talking about it, but that thing is wildly transgressive and really, really interesting. So check those out if you are so inclined and you want some more of this. I probably shouldn't be plugging my shows after my showing this evening.
Oh, you're fantastic.
I should be going under a pseudonym. My name is Raquel. I have no association with Zombie Girls. I broke into the studio here. They don't even know me. Disown me, everyone.
All right. Well, we're going to be covering next week John Carpenter's Body Bags. We appreciate everyone for listening. We'd really appreciate if you would give us a rating and review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypts.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you ask for. You may get it.